Welcome to Make and Decorate, a podcast for makers who love to sew, quilt, knit, and decorate. Hello, everybody. I'm Stephanie, your hostess with the mostest when it comes to making and decorating it all. Welcome back. Yes, I am finally back with the second half of season 6 with all brand new episodes. For new listeners, this is a long format show where I present maker topics on sewing, quilting, knitting, gardening, sometimes paper crafts, and decorating for your home. I do a mix of guest and solo episodes. If you have an interest in any or all of those topics, you have come to the right place. On this episode, I have a lovely conversation with my guest, Belle Bruner, with Seam Sew Me. We talk about Belle's quilting story, including her fabulous quilt patterns, and much, much more. Before we get to that, I have a reminder about my Patreon group, Make and Decorate. The website link is always in the show notes, and it is patreon.com/makeanddecorate. Patreon has recently added a free membership feature available where you can join in chats with me and everyone in the group. There are also paid subscription tiers with a bonus podcast episode every month, including the months when the show is on break between seasons. So you will get an episode every month of the year. And when we are in seasons, you will get like up to 3 episodes a month. After the guest segment, there's a musical interlude before a short chit-chat segment at the end. The song is called Never Look Back by KEV. All right, let's listen to my chat with Belle Bruner with Seam Sew Me. My guest today is Belle Bruner. Belle is a quilter, pattern designer, and blogger at Seam Sew Me. She also teaches quilting classes and quilt guild training and is a brand ambassador for Havel Sewing, Oliso, and Daylight Company. And Daylight Company is my favorite light, by the way. So welcome, Belle, and thank you for coming on to my show and chatting with me.
Oh, Stephanie, thanks for inviting me. Thanks for having me. I'm thrilled to be here.
Yeah, I'm excited to chat with you. And we really just met back in June and at the H&H America show at the Craft Industry Alliance dinner. And I sat right next to you and I had a great time meeting you and finding out everything you do. And learning about what you do in our quilting world. So we're going to start with your quilting story, but I want to ask you a little trivia question. There was a dessert at that dinner that you said was the best blank you had ever had in your life.
Do you cheesecake. Wasn't it cheesecake?
Yes, yeah. It was. It was so funny.
Oh my goodness.
Just like,
it was good. I love cheesecake. And what's funny is when I got back from H&H, I started looking for the best cheesecake recipe. And so now I have one that I make. It's a no-bake cheesecake. And I usually make it once a month.
Wow. That, like, you got everybody excited about that dessert because you were so convincing. It was the best ever.
Oh, I tell you it was. And I wanted to eat my friend. I was with another pattern designer, Maude, and I wanted to eat hers. And the guy next to me said, if you ate hers, would she still be your friend? Like, how close is your friendship? I said, yeah, she would still be my friend if I ate hers.
Well, that's a good friend right there, for sure. Yeah. So, all right, your quilt story, I guess start with where you're from and located now, and go ahead and tell us.
Sure. So I am an Arkansas native, but I've lived kind of all over. I'm 48 and I left the state of Arkansas right after college. So I moved to Washington when I was 20. So I lived in the Seattle area, Puget Sound area for a while. And then I lived in Colorado, the Denver area. Then from there, I moved back to Arkansas for a little bit, for about 12 years. But it was the northwest corner of the state. And then I moved to Alabama. So Huntsville, Alabama. I lived there for a bit. And then Springfield, Missouri. And now, as of 4 weeks ago, we have relocated back and will be here all the way through retirement to be close to my dad. So I am in the Washoe National Forest in Arkansas. So I'm back where I started.
Oh, how nice. That's a nice circle. You've lived a lot of places. Is it job related or?
Yeah. Every time I moved, it was job related with the other work that I've done. I have another business, but I've worked for companies in the same industry for a while. And I just moved around with that and I loved it. You know, I was I think my graduating class was about 25 people and there weren't many of us that left, maybe about three that left the area, possibly three or four that left the state.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's good. But it's just exciting because you had the opportunity to live in so many different places and climates. And
I did. You know, I enjoy people and I enjoy variety. You know, everybody's got a story and a background. I love different foods and trying those out. And, you know, sometimes in some rural parts of the South, you can get sheltered. And my grandmother started me at an early age of about five traveling. So it's always really been in my blood to, you know, to travel and experience other people and cultures. And so I was really excited to do that and have got to do so for 48 years. And so
yeah,
it's time to come back home and be closer to my dad, help run an Airbnb that we've kind of built together. So so that's where I'm at now. Very I'm just recovering from the move.
This is where you just moved to from.
Yes. So
where you were before. Okay. Right.
We downsized as far as the home. We're now on 3 acres in rural Arkansas. And the house is smaller, but we needed offices, right? Because we had a larger home and I had my own office. My husband had his own office there and then we had our bedrooms. And so it was difficult to find what we needed here in this rural part of the country. So found a place, smaller house, but it had two outbuildings. So currently you're seeing my studio. It is a former RV garage. And my father converted it for my studio / office. And then the other building that was a workshop is now my husband's office. So we kind of have a better work-life balance, work-life rhythm that everything's not happening in the house.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really a nice, definitely a nice setup, layout that you guys have for your work and living. And 3 acres, I just can't even imagine it because, you know, I'm in this city just outside of a city of Chicago. Chicago's like Chicago's a mile away, but we're still like considered city with the one-way streets and all the street parking. But I mean, the neighbors are like right there and right there. So
yeah, you can't see our neighbors.
So different.
Yeah. Our house is a partial underground house. And so you can't see, you know, there's lots of windows in the front, so you can't see your neighbor. So it is a nice change after living in several cities to just be out with nature. And I feel calmer. Mm-hmm. My husband feels calmer. So, yeah, it's good.
Yeah, that's very nice. I love seeing what I can see on the video of your studio. I knew when I first said hello to you, I'm like, well, that is a nice, big, spacious place. Well, I'm trying to think, is this a room or is she in a store?
Well, it's a former large, it's 700 square feet. It was an RV garage that was not finished on the inside. So insulation was put on, the heat and air unit, lighting, more plugins for my machines. And then the floors were painted because they were just basic concrete. So
that's nice.
But I have to say, I did not get all of this put together by myself. I flew in a friend of mine, another designer from Canada, and she spent four full days, 6 days altogether if you count travel days. And we worked about 10-hour days for those 4 days. She helped me unpack and literally get all this set up so I could get back to work.
Yeah, it's really cozy. And I love that you have one of your quilts on the wall behind you, which we're going to talk about. So let's continue on with your story about when you started quilting, because it's not been that long, I don't think.
3 years.
And what?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. 3 years. And why?
It's so
really amazing.
I'm a beginner pandemic quilter. So it came about because of the pandemic. I had never quilted before. I had taken a home economics class and learned how to use a sewing machine back 30 something years ago in high school. My mother did sew garments. She sewed beautiful suits and dress suits and dresses and all. And she made a few things for me, but she never taught me how to sew. Mm-hmm. My grandmother on my dad's side, so my dad's mother, she was a quilter, but she lived about an hour away, and we usually only got to see her in the summers. And when we would go visit, she would put up all that stuff. So she would spend quality time with us, but she never taught me. So I remember mm-hmm. seeing her buttons, which if you look back there in the back, those are her button tins. I would play in that, you know, when I was little.
Yeah.
And then she had a big hoop on the back covered porch that she would quilt, but I never got to see her do it and she never showed me. So when the pandemic hit, you know, a lot of work that I do, I have another business as a trainer and consultant working with various nonprofits and also do a lot of leadership training and strategic planning and work with teams and businesses to help them get along and communicate well. All of that was virtual. And I was about to lose my mind. I needed a hobby. And we had a little sewing machine in the corner that I had bought for my little bonus daughter. She's my stepdaughter. But she was a little too young to learn how to use it. She did not want to learn to use it properly. And so we're like, okay, it's just going to have to sit here until mm-hmm. you know, you're ready to learn to use it, not hurt yourself or the machine. Mm-hmm. And so I thought, well, now I'll make something. And then I was like, well, what am I going to make? I don't even remember completely how to thread the machine. It had been so long. So I got on YouTube and I thought, well, what about a quilt? My grandmother made quilts. How hard could that be? And found Melanie K. Ham. And I learned mm-hmm. what the construction of a quilt was. And then from there, I found Melanie Traylor of Southern Charm Quilts. And that's really where I learned how to piece and, you know, put quilt tops together and all of that. So it was a hobby. It turned out to be a hobby during that first year of the pandemic. And then I also opened an Etsy shop because I wanted – one of my slogan is make lovely things. I love mm-hmm. using things that are pretty and lovely. And I could not find any pretty quilting pens, like pretty pens to pen with. And so I decided I was going to make my own. So I started making my own that were made out of like wooden buttons for the pen heads. And if you dropped them in the carpet, you could easily see them. And so I started selling them and they started selling pretty well on Etsy. Mm-hmm. And then from there, I started making alphabet and number clips, these jumbo alphabet number clips that I started selling to label your fabric pieces. So that's where it started, was Etsy, while I was still a hobby quilter. And then I came across a pattern writing course, the Quilter's Candy pattern writing course, and thought, you know, I kind of switch patterns around a little bit. I wonder what would be involved with writing my own patterns. And then it was all uphill from there.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's great. Wow. It's just, you know, and I think this is true for almost everybody, but when you find something that just connects with you and you have a passion for it, it's just that much more exciting. And you know, you just keep going and going and going down the rabbit hole.
I couldn't give it up. I mean, there's something mm-hmm. that happens with the dopamine rush. I mean, I really looked into the chemical piece of hobbies with something, a hobby that you just really love, and there is a dopamine release with mm-hmm. it. And so I was still working full time when you know, I decided to open up this small business. And then eventually it got to be to where I broke away from working for someone else and opened my own business doing what I've done for years. And then this business too. So I actually have two part-time businesses mm-hmm. that really make up one, you know, ultimately.
Yeah.
For income. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I do too. I freelance interior design and then do my side of the business. So yeah, I understand that you do a lot of work, but you also have kids too, right?
I have one bonus daughter, stepdaughter. She's 12 And she goes back and forth. So she's with us once a month now, anywhere from like a 3-4 day weekend to, you know, spring break, fall break, winter break. We'll have her in the summers. She's not here full time. No.
Okay. Yeah. But I mean, it's still another aspect of your life that
sure.
keeps you busy.
Yeah, sure. absolutely.
Yeah. With running your businesses and so forth. But, that's, it's so amazing. And I also watched Melanie Ham and loved her, style of teaching and her personality. It was very, welcoming and, just she broke things down really just so you could absorb them and create something.
She did. And it was so sad when she passed because after I found her, she got sick maybe 6 months or 7 months after I found her. And then she, you know, wasn't recording anymore.
Yeah.
She passed away.
It was surprising to me. Yeah. It's
so young.
Just, so young. And I still haven't been able to watch. It's so sad. But when her husband made that movie,
I want to. It's good.
I just
you
know
should watch
it's going to be heartbreaking. I should. I really, really should.
Yeah. I cried.
I want to. I know. That's why it was too soon when he first put it out. And then since then, I think about it or run across it. So. She was such a great person.
Yeah, and a great teacher.
I don't personally know her, but a lot of people that watched her.
You feel like you did. You feel like you knew her.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, you do. Yeah. So that's great. I mean, it's amazing how much you've just thrived just after learning a new hobby. You did have a tiny bit of background, but still not anything, you know, that you had been doing already.
Right.
So that's really great. The pins that you made for Etsy, how did you even, did you find somebody to manufacture for you or you were making
these? I was making it. So this was before I was designing patterns, right? So I, you know, I could do it on the weekends because, you know, I worked at the time was working remotely. We weren't traveling because of COVID. I just opened, I got a little book on how to open up an Etsy shop and basically was making enough money to cover my fabric for my hobby quilting, you know?
Oh, that's not bad.
No.
Yeah.
It was fun. And
fantastic.
Then it just grew from there. Once I took the pattern writing course and learned all about actually what was involved. You know, it's funny because I thought initially you just buy EQ8, design your pattern, and it spits out the directions and everything. And I have to tell you, Stephanie, how heartbroken I was when I printed it out. And it's just the graphic.
Right.
Barely. Right. I'm like, what? I paid $250. And I was like, oh, boy, I need to take some kind of class and get some education. And so that's what I did. Yeah. And
you thought it was going to ChatGPT your pattern and instructions.
I did. I was so, I literally almost cried. I was like, are you kidding me?
Oh, man.
Yeah.
But I still think, I think it's brilliant that it can calculate the yardage. I don't know if, I don't know how, I haven't asked any pattern designers if they really like go trust blindly with that, or they also figure it out.
I do them.
I would too.
I double check it because sometimes it can be slightly off. So, you know, I have pattern testers and I have a tech editor and they go through and check all that for me to make sure.
That's great. So let's talk about now you have a website and with your online shop with your quilt patterns and you have a nice handful of quilt patterns already now.
Yeah, I have four that are in booklet format and they're with all the distributors, all four distributors. And then I have a few others that are just PDF only. I typically am releasing 2 to 3 patterns a year just because I also am now traveling and teaching at guilds and then national shows. So I taught for AQS Week this spring.
Nice.
Next month, I'll be going to Nashville and teaching at the Original Sewing and Quilting Expo. And then I'm so excited. I'm going to be teaching at International Quilt Festival in Houston this fall.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's great. Can you tell us what you're teaching?
Yeah, sure. It's been what everybody's been wanting and what they've kind of picked me to teach. I have a cathedral window, 2 cathedral window patterns. And I use a kind of a modern technique that doesn't involve the old envelope method. And okay. So nobody's been teaching that. So it's kind of been a hot topic to teach. So that's what I've been doing. And of course, that's, you know, what you see in the background. I just think it's a beautiful, classy block. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I've been teaching there.
Oh, so you're teaching your method of cathedral.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Your pattern. Your
cathedral. Yeah, my pattern's there. Pattern. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's right behind you. It's beautiful. I always love the cathedral quilt because I love curves in a quilt a lot. Like I am drawn to applique and double wedding ring, just curves. I really love them in quilts. And that has that too. It's got the curves and the geometric.
Yeah. And what's nice about it is it's really kind of a trick because there's no actual curved sewing. The way it's made, it's all actually square pieces of fabric, but it has to do kind of with the technique of how it's folded. Those frames are folded that makes it look like you've sewn curves and you haven't pieced curves, I should say.
Okay.
Yeah.
That is so clever. Very clever.
I mean, there's actually, I've learned since I came out with the first one, there are other people that do it kind of similar. I think I'm the only one that uses glue. I use a glue to be able to do it, but there's mm-hmm. several ways that you can. I've learned that people have done it several ways. So it's not 100% mm-hmm. unique to me, but I don't know of anybody that teaches it exactly with all the steps that I do that way. That makes it where you can still quilt the quilt. Uh-huh. Because if you do a real true all cathedral window method, you cannot quilt the quilt top.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yeah. So if you do everything all cathedral window, because I could use this method and make it all, but you would have to actually tie it off to quilt it. Mm-hmm. And it's extremely heavy. So the two patterns I've designed, I've created, there's some negative space where you actually can still either custom free motion quilts in the negative space, or you can stitch in the ditch and you can do it yourself. I almost called this pattern behind me the recession quilt, because you could quilt this yourself without paying a long armor. If you had to, you quilt in the ditch on the grid yourself mm-hmm. on your domestic machine. So I think that's what's nice about it, is that you can still quilt it. Unlike mm-hmm. if you made it this way, completely all cathedral windows, you just have to do the ties.
Because of the thickness of the layers of the enveloping, right?
Well, there's no negative space. And where there is negative space, there are thick seams behind it.
Right.
And really you can't, there's really no ditches to follow lines to stitch in. So So I started doing this over a year ago, and then recently I noticed another designer, you know, decided to do all cathedral windows, and you can't quilt it. You do have to tie it off, because those little, remember the old ties where you would tie?
Oh yeah. Yep. Yeah. My grandmother made me a quilt that was tied like that.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's kind of the difference.
That's a cute look too. Mm-hmm. But I wasn't aware that you really couldn't mm-hmm. quilt through a traditional cathedral.
Yeah. And it's heavy. And the thing about it too, is if you do all cathedral window completely, it takes like 7-8 yards of background fabric. It's an extremely costly quilt to make. If you
for a lap size quilt.
Oh yeah. For all cathedral windows, it's heavy.
It's a lot of fabric.
Yeah. It's a lot of fabric that can be expensive. So I was like, how can I come up with a way to make the cathedral window, still be able to quilt it, and not use quite as much fabric for the budget there?
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wow. That's really cool. I like learning about this, because I've never made a cathedral before, and I didn't know that you could make one. I mean, it looks just like it. With no curved stitching.
Yeah. Well, I'll send you the pattern. If you've never made one, I'll send you the pattern.
I haven't. Oh, all right.
I'll send you. So you can make it. You just got to promise to make it.
Oh, that's the $1 million promise.
Right. It's like, how many of us have all these patterns that we thought, oh, I'm going to make it, and I've not done it yet.
No, I do. I would make it for myself, But I've got all these other quilts. I'm way behind on two baby quilts for, well, no, one baby quilt and one like school age boy.
Yeah.
Well, my both my nephews.
This one comes in a baby size. It comes in three sizes. So.
Oh yeah, how nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, very good. I'm so excited. I can't wait to see the pattern.
It's called
That's
going to
be a nice class.
Yeah, it's called Winsome Windows is this one. Winsome Windows. And then the other pattern.
Winsome. Mm-hmm. You win some and you lose some.
Oh, that's good. Win. Yeah, Winsome. Winsome. And then the other one is called River Glen, which is actually the name of our family property. Oh. Because the way the cathedral window blocks are made, it looks like stars in the sky. And you can see those very clearly out in the country out here. Oh, so
very nice.
Yeah.
And there's another thing that you have in it, and you have a YouTube channel, mm-hmm. and there is a video on there about making the quilt journal cover, right?
Yeah.
Is that on there, or where did I see that?
I
might have seen it on your website.
The quilt journal cover was my very first pattern. I started writing it before I took the pattern writing course. And then
I remember where I heard it from.
Yeah. I was like, I need to learn how to finish that, like, you know, make it more professional. Mm. So that actually is on my website. It was my first pattern and it's still
It's on your website. Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. And you were taught, you are in another show. You were on a
podcast. I've been on.
So it wasn't a video.
And like maybe three or four other podcasts. So that's probably where you heard about it.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. So, I went immediately to try to find it and see what that was all about. And your cathedral window, and there's a pinwheels pattern.
Yeah, so the pinwheel pattern, that's a really special one. That launched in April, and that was in recognition of Child Abuse Prevention Month. So April every year is National Child Abuse Prevention Month. And of course, pinwheels you associate with children. And so that was part of a national launch. It was also supported by the National Children's Alliance. I sent them the quilt and they had it on display. And that pattern is free to quilt guilds that adopt their local children's advocacy center as a philanthropy. And they make the lovely pinwheels pattern and donate those quilts because those quilts are given out to children that have been sexually abused.
Okay.
Once they receive services and they've had a forensic interview and a medical exam, when they leave, some of them do stuffed animals. A lot of them will do quilts because, you know, they can snuggle with them and all that.
Yeah.
So that pattern is free to guilds. There's a form they can fill out. It's on my website on the blog. There's a blog article about Lovely Pinwheels that talks all about that special quilt. And they can download the form. And when they work with their local advocacy center, they can get that for free.
Okay. Oh, that's a very good thing for quilt guilds. And it just reminded me too that I think this type of work that you do with like charities and with social work, right? You used to do something.
I used to be a social worker. I did in my 20s.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So you have a really strong background in that, and it's let you sort of kind of develop and grow through others, and even with your quilting business. So it's wonderful.
Yeah, I used to be a social worker, but I don't do any of the direct work with kids anymore, but I still do consulting for those advocacy centers. They're nonprofits. And so later on in life, my background turned into working with nonprofits and businesses doing leadership development, strategic planning, succession planning, helping nonprofits grow. And what happened was when I got into this industry of quilting, I found that there were challenges in quilt guilds. And so the work I do with other nonprofits easily spilled over into the need for guilds to have board of directors training on how do you run a nonprofit? How do you do fundraising? How do you help membership? How do you all get along? How do you be a great director? So that's another arm of the Seam Sew Me business. And it's on my website that I do training and consulting for quilt guilds.
Wow. That's, I don't even know if there's anything else out there like that, but that is so just needed, I think, because quilt guilds just can pop up anywhere and anybody can run them. But do they know, you know, the training is very important, I think, is and especially if it's out there for them.
Well, that's kind of what happened, Stephanie. There were no resources. There was no training. There was nothing mm-hmm. for them. And I thought, hey, I do this in my other worlds. The basic tenets apply. You still have problems that happen in those organizations, just like they do in other mm-hmm. nonprofits and even for-profit businesses. You've got clicks. Sometimes there's no inclusion, no diversity, and I do training and all of that. So I'm actually in the middle of creating a course for guild boards of directors where they can, it's roles and responsibilities. So it's basically an orientation for new board members that they can take online because some guilds can't afford for me to come out, right?
Sure.
Mm-hmm. And I do training virtually with them, but, you know, in person's always better. Mm-hmm. So I'm working on a course, a board roles and responsibilities training that'll go live sometime the last quarter of this year that they can just take as individuals. Mm-hmm. And then I'll probably add more topics to that with time mm-hmm. so that they can kind of get those resources that they need.
Oh, that's great. I think it's important also to offer something like that now with the online opportunity because it's just so hard to go anywhere or, you know, with it, and everybody has different responsibilities and the accessibility of that really will, I think, make a difference for sure.
I think so too. Yeah.
Yeah.
I want to make it accessible.
It is always nice to have in person as well. So you do it all, which is good.
Right. I do in person.
Yeah.
I do live mm-hmm. virtual, like if we were on Zoom, mm-hmm. if they want the live. And then I'm going to develop, you know, in the middle of developing all the, I've got the content. Yeah. I've just got to convert it over into the platform. It'll be on Thinkific. Okay. And they'll be able to just, it'll be very cost effective for them. And so mm-hmm. last quarter of the year, that'll come out. And then also a podcast. It's called the Quilt Guild Podcast. That'll go live. I had to postpone it because of this move. I'd hoped to go mm-hmm. live with it this summer, but with relocating out of state, it was just too ambitious. Mm-hmm. So it'll be all about quilt guilds and what they do for the community, how they help, challenges they have, how they've overcome challenges, and then me talking mm-hmm. some about tips and tricks for guilds. So that'll be out later this year too.
Oh, that sounds great. It really does. Because you know, whether or not we want to admit it, yes, the quilting world is all fuzzy and warm and wonderful. And there are so many nice, sharing, kind, caring people in this, you know, community of ours. But there's always the existence of the opposite. So...
Well, and you know, that's kind of how it came about, Stephanie. I mm-hmm. had these stories. People were telling me stories about how, you know, the quilt police, and they were made to feel if they didn't piece or quilt a certain way, or, and I was just devastated. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, you know what, Belle? This kind of nonsense happens in other nonprofits. And this kind of behavior, we're all human. And so it's going to happen from time to time. But I did a national survey and some of the stories and the information I got back, it was like, you know what? I think this could be needed and it could be helpful because I want guilds to thrive mm-hmm. to where my little bonus daughter or people that are 40, let's see, I was 45 at the time that wanted to quilt, feel included to join a guild. You know, I don't want someone to be, you know, feel like they can't be included because of whatever discrimination, whatever it is. Right. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I actually do a lecture. I do a lecture nationally and at guilds about building healthy quilt guilds and the four tenets that are really needed to create that safe environment and that inclusive mm-hmm. environment. So it's a passion of mine.
Yeah, that's great. It's just, I've even just seen drama going on in just literal Instagram where it's just all out there. Just it's like, you feel like you shouldn't be like watching this back and forth conversation going on, but there it is for everybody to see.
We're just trying to make some quilts, right? It's useless energy that doesn't need to be used for that kind of conflict. And, let's just all get along and have harmony and spend our time making quilts for philanthropies, right?
Yeah,
for
people that need them. And having fun.
And having fun. Yeah.
It needs to be fun. Because why are you doing it? Quilting is fun, but it's still like you're doing labor.
Yeah, it's
you're
true.
You're working.
It's true.
You know? So why make that miserable?
Yeah.
Great work. Yes, I love it. And your background is perfect for that. So I'm really glad that you became a quilter in the pandemic.
Oh, thanks. Yeah. Well, so hopefully it's a little helpful piece to put out there in the world.
This will be in the show notes. I'll have the links to all your places that you're at. And definitely I wrote that down to put a link to your blog post about the lovely pinwheels quilt for Quilt Guild to check out. And then tell everyone, just, I'm going to put it in the show notes, but just tell us real quickly where we can find you.
Sure. So I'm really active on Instagram. So that is Seams, and it's a play on words, SEAMS_SEW_me. Also, I'm on YouTube. So one of the things about me is I'm a visual learner. So all of my patterns that are patterns that you purchase include a link within the pattern that takes you to a private link on YouTube to visually see how to make the block on top of the written directions. So all of my patterns have a video tutorial. And then I have other tutorials that are public just on how to, you know, make needle books, pin cushions, you know, other things. So I'm doing that as well. Good. And then I do have a Facebook account. And that's just my name, Belle Bruner, and then Seam Sew Me. But mainly on Instagram is the best place to find me. Instagram and YouTube.
Instagram.
And then my website, of course, my website. On the website, there'll be – the tab's not there right now, but there will be another tab because we, as I mentioned, built an Airbnb, and it's an Airbnb/quilting retreat. So there's a whole section connected to the Airbnb that'll be a multi-purpose area for hosting very small, intimate retreats. Mm-hmm. And that will be open in the spring. We'd hope to open it this fall, but – with the move and it just took longer to build and all of that, it's going to take a bit. So I'll be starting to host those next spring.
Oh, exciting. Wow.
Yeah. If you want to come to the woods and sew.
Yeah. That would be a retreat.
Yeah. It's right on the water. It's on the river and the mountains.
Oh, I like that. Yeah. Okay. So any last words of wisdom to part with us today?
Last words of wisdom. I would say there's a phrase, take what works and leave the rest. So try things. Don't be afraid of making mistakes, which we like to call in our household teaching moments. Mm-hmm. Just try the things. It doesn't mean that you're going to love each thing you try in the quilty world, but that's how you explore and find out if something is for you. And don't be afraid to mess it up, you know, and keep trying. So I just say be flexible and experiment. And then if you don't like it, then just leave it, right? So you don't have to keep doing it. And don't be afraid to start later in life. I was 45 when I started. Mm-hmm. And, sometimes I think we can be self-conscious and think, oh, I could possibly do this. Absolutely. Yeah. There's a will, there's a way. We set our mind to it. We can really do so much.
Absolutely. I'm a total firm believer in that. I mean, I started knitting in the pandemic. And I'm 4 years older than you. So that's starting later in life.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. I said this in my last episode because I go over some stuff at the end of what I've been watching. And Netflix has this show out about the blue zones of the world. And the blue zones are the places that have more people over the age of 100. Yeah. And then this guy goes and just spends time with these people and finds out. And he, at
he took away four things that were like common in every single area. Mm-hmm. And one of them was find your purpose, and not find your purpose in life, because it's finding your purpose when you're retired and in your older years. So, and one of that was sewing. This woman had her sewing machine mm-hmm. out. She made her clothes, and she's, you know, like 100 or near 100. So, I took that away with me, and it's, you're right. You could be at any age, because, it just helps you in many, many ways, your mind and dexterity, and
it's therapeutic.
Mood. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for taking the time to come on my show. And I really enjoy chatting with you.
Oh, well, thank you so much for having me, Stephanie. I appreciate it.
I got another chance to rise above the emptiness. Got a brand new plan for me like a silhouette. I looking up, gonna get what we want. Our time to overcome, the stars align for us. Hearts soaring like a jet plane, crushing and we never look back. Tell them this is our game, we're taking it with all that we have. It'll never be the same.
Thanks for staying with me for the chit chat segment. It's been a while since our last chit chat. And ironically, I do not have a lot of sewing or quilting updates due to work and commission sewing. But I can tell you that I did complete the embroidered table runner napkins and placemats for a client project in December. And 2 weeks ago, I completed another commission tablecloth project. As far as commission projects go, I have one more very long tablecloth to sew, and back to the braided iris chain king size quilt that paused last fall. To fill you in on these tablecloth projects, the finished sizes of these are 127 inches long by 64 inches wide. That is over 11 feet of fabric to wrangle on a small work table, and adds to the challenges of squaring up and doing the pattern repeats. The pattern repeat on the tablecloth I just finished was an 1.5-inch plaid check, and I was pretty happy with how it turned out. If you want to try pattern matching, I have a couple of main tips on getting that successful pattern match. First, you will want to cut fabric lengths longer than just what's needed with seam allowances. And this will allow for ample room to match the repeats perfectly, because you'll have to move the fabric up or down to match the one side, one piece of fabric to the other piece of fabric, and pattern match it to make it look like it's a seamless piece, single piece of fabric. So I would probably cut it maybe two pattern repeats at least. In fact, I did more than that because mine was an inch and a half, but I added at least an additional 12 inches to that cut size, which also includes the seam allowance. And thank goodness I did, because it definitely was needed in some areas. And then the extra just gets squared off when all the pieces are sewn together. The second thing is to use a walking foot with the open toe if your walking foot has one. Dual feed is not going to be enough. This task really needs the full-on walking foot attachment. Why, you may ask? Because the walking foot will feed the top layer of fabric evenly with the lower layer of fabric through the machine. It works in tandem with the feed dogs on the machine to evenly move those fabric layers together, and it really does a great job with pattern matching. Then, if you use home deck fabric and you're sewing full widths together, the pattern is printed or woven with the repeat from one selvage edge to match up with the opposite selvage edge. So let's say, mostly this is for like making draperies or even some long upholstery, but that's like a whole nother thing we won't get into. But for sewing drapery panels, a width of home deck fabric is usually around 54 inches wide, and then you have about an inch of selvage on each side, leaving you with about 52 inches of usable fabric width. And that's great if you need two full widths of fabric connected for draperies. But if you have a long and a wide tablecloth or a duvet cover, then that center seam down the middle is not really going to look nice, and you won't want to piece your fabrics together like that. You'll want to have the biggest piece of your main fabric, or sort of center it where the side pieces attached to that center piece equals your full width that you need evenly. So, for instance, that 52 inches of usable space is the center. And let's say a duvet cover needs to be 92 inches wide. So you've got an extra 40 inches. The 40 inches you divide by 2. That gives you 20 inches for each side. And then you add in your seam allowances on home deck, like duvet covers and tablecloths and draperies. The seam allowance is typically a half an inch. So you're going to add an inch for each piece, plus the hemming. So there's a lot of adding. And you're only adding hemming if you're hemming an unlined tablecloth. But duvets are going to just be the full 1 inch seam allowance. It's not that hard to figure out. You just have to take your time and then make sure that you definitely do your math like a couple to three times, if you're me at least, just to want to make sure, because you got to measure twice and cut once, right? And then those tied pieces get attached to the big middle piece. And then when you match your patterns to each side of that middle piece, then you have this beautiful looking pattern uninterrupted all the way across. It's a beautiful thing. All right, so I've got a few new personal sewing projects on my list. And the first one is for my kitchen, and it is a new set of pot holders. I need new pot holders. And I really love the Peter Rabbit ones at Williams-Sonoma. They're so beautiful. But they only sell them with one mitt and one pot holder as a set. They do not sell them individually. So you would have to get two full sets, which is a little bit on the exorbitant side, I would say. Especially because they're more of a seasonal thing and not like a whole year round. So I prefer pot holders over oven mitts. And what is one to do with this quandary? Make them myself. I found very cute Peter Rabbit fabric at the big box store online, and I found a really pretty gingham for the binding. This is a rare case where making them will be less than buying them, which is good too. Have you noticed cargo pants making a big comeback? They're everywhere I look, including a new Cashmere Club pattern called the Esmond pants. These pants are designed for cotton duck fabric, and it has two views, one with different styled pockets and the other different ankle closures, like one style is elastic and the other one has ties. These pants are really perfect for spring and going into summer, and they are meant to be made with cotton duck fabric. And then the one with the ties, probably you can use pre-bought twill tape, but I think I'll probably make the ties out of the same fabric if I have enough of it, which is how they show it on the patterned front photograph. Also, I really love the color of the one pair on the cover, which is in like this corally rose color. It's so pretty. And it was just sort of, I guess, like a kismet moment where I actually found almost exactly the same color in a cotton duck fabric online. And it was on a super crazy low clearance price, and I got the last few yards that they had. I mean, how meant to be was that? This was in late fall, so I think that's why this fabric was the price point that it was, and it just worked out wonderfully. So now all I have to do is make the time to make these. I even sent away the PDFs to have them printed, and I've gotten those back now. So again, I got to get some time, and I really want to make those. They're really so very cute, and hopefully it's not going to be too terrible. I mean, there is a zipper fly and a couple of snaps at the waistband, but the pockets are sewn on, so they're like patch pockets, so that's easier. And the ankle closures should be fine too, because it's just a simple casing that you fish the twill tape or the elastic through. All right, and there's one more thing on my list that I do want to make, and that is a new kitchen apron. I really don't like that style of the kitchen apron where you see everywhere ready-made that has like the tie that goes around your neck and the bib and then ties at your waist. Because the ties around the neck, I don't know, they bother me. They always seem to kind of like be pulling or something. And I really like how the types of aprons that look like tunics or dresses, and they're kind of like a sleeveless style that you just put on, almost like a smock. Those I think I like a lot better and would be a lot more comfortable and have more coverage to keep unwanted food, you know, splotches off of your good clothing. Helen's Closet has a pattern called the York Pinafore. It was very popular when it first came out several years ago. And since then, she added an extension pack for the York apron. And it's really very cute. I made this with my niece because she also wanted to make an apron a couple months ago. And so I saw how cute it was turning out. And then I thought, I am definitely going to make one of these for me. All right, let's just talk a little bit about gardening. Oh my gosh, it is on most of January. I was just not feeling inspired for planting seeds or planning this year's garden. So I thought, well, maybe this is a year where I take a break from it and just go, you know, it's springtime to buy plants from the garden center. And then towards the end of January, I put on a few gardening shows. One of them is from BritBox and it's called Beech Grove Garden. Oh my gosh, I love that show. I had it on while sewing and got through the entire season within a few days. I got so many ideas and inspiration from that show, and that's all it took to get me going on planning this year's garden. It is so just, it's amazing how you can just be inspired by just something you see or watch, or just by even talking about it to someone else. Because then I was talking to my sister last week and showed her, you know, what I thought for the garden. I actually made a seed inventory list. I always like to make lists and I like draw the little circle bullet points. I find some, I don't know, satisfaction in doing my lists that way. I took seed inventory. I made a list of what I needed to order or wanted to order for this year's garden. Then I drew a sketch of my backyard so that I could visualize the placement of these new shrub plants that I placed an order for. And I hope they work out. I really, really do. They're going to be really tiny, like 1 to 2 foot tall plants, and it will take them a while to grow into their fullness. But one of them is a red dogwood plant shrub. And the other one is a holly tree. It's called the Foster Holly, and it grows naturally in a cone shape, which I find very cool. So that's mostly why I did the sketch. And it was so much fun. So anyway, I was telling my sister about this, and then she got all inspired. She's like, oh my gosh, I love that you made a bullet journal. And I was like, I did what? I had no idea that's what it was. I just thought I was making a list for my garden and like organizing myself. But she cracked me up. Bullet journal. Okay. So anyway, yeah. So that's the update and news on the garden. And the last topic for the chit-chat segment will be what I've been watching. I finally watched Oppenheimer, and this is available on NBC or the Peacock app. We finally watched this highly acclaimed movie, Cillian Murphy and Robert Downey Jr. He is one of my favorite actors, by the way. They were so good. And you completely forgot the actor, which is their goal, I guess, is to become the character. And they definitely both did that. And I have to say, I did not know much about, well, I mean, I don't know who does know a great deal about nuclear physics, but I certainly do not. And I also really had little knowledge about how the atom bomb was developed. So it was a pretty gripping movie. It was very, very sad, scary, and maddening. Those were like all of the emotions that kind of flowed through me during this movie. So it is really very good. But I just, again, it's just all the emotions. On Hulu, The Feud is in its second season, and it's called Truman Capote or Capote and the Swans. And it's currently in mid-season, so new episodes are coming out every week. I almost gave up on this show, like after an episode or two in. And then I watched the 2019 Netflix documentary on Truman Capote, and that's available on Netflix. This explained a lot about him and the character that they have on this Feud season 2. And it just, because I really didn't know that much about him going into that show. I knew who he was. I knew, you know, what he wrote. But other than that, I had no idea. So this documentary explained a lot about him, his story, and motives that led him to do what happens on that Hulu show, The Feud, which is to work his way into New York's high society in like the 1950s or 60s, I think. And he gets really close with the inner circle and then exposes all of their secrets to the world. And I'm not spoiling anything because, I mean, this is, you could see it on the documentary. It's no big secret. On Max, True Detective North Country season 4 just wrapped up. So I won't say anything more about that because I really don't want to spoil anything on that show. This is the one with Jodie Foster, and it's a pretty good season, I would say. On Apple TV, there's a new show that just started. It's a series, and it's called The New Look. It takes place in the 40s, and it is about Christian Dior, Coco Chanel, Balenciaga, and a few other designers, fashion designers, and how they were at the forefront of modern fashion. And it was all takes place in, during, you know, those tumultuous years of World War II and Hitler and Europe. So I've watched one episode, maybe two, and I really like it. It's pretty good. So that's on Apple TV. And that will bring us to the end of this episode. Thank you so much for listening. Don't be shy to drop me a DM or an email. Until next time, may your needles be sharp and your threads be endless. Happy making. Bye-bye. If you love the Make and Decorate with Stephanie podcast, check out my Patreon page at patreon.com/makeanddecorate. You'll get a bonus episode every month, even during the months that the show is on hiatus. Thanks for listening, and I will chat with you next time. Bye-bye.